Most of us have a little difficulty with waiting. I don't have any problem waiting to preach because I'm usually up here. In fact, I could go ahead and preach after the first sermon or after the first prayer, really. But if there's a delay, we just kind of get out of sorts. Been noticing all this work they've been doing on the roads around here? Look at this unnecessary stopping of traffic. Just make you sit there. How many of you put a big smile on your face and say, "Praise God, I got stopped by a flagman this morning"? No. That's not our attitude. We don't like to wait. We don't like to wait at the doctor's office. We don't like to wait at the checkout counter. We don't like to wait at a restaurant. We don't like to wait at traffic jams or red lights. We don't like to wait for our wives to get ready. We don't like to wait for our husbands to do those odd jobs. It's even uncomfortable to wait on the preacher to get started, right? But all of those things are fairly insignificant things. Yet they underscore the fact that we have difficulty waiting. Now, let's talk about something, whatever it may be, in your life. It could be a little bit more serious than those things. I expect that almost every one of us has at least one very significant concern on our heart this morning. Something that is a matter of prayer. Something for which we are waiting on God's help, God's intervention. And we are struggling with the wait. Maybe it's a dream that is still just a dream. Perhaps it's a promotion that's never came about, or a new job that's never materialized. Perhaps it's a business opportunity you're waiting for, or you're excited about some ministry and the opportunity hasn't presented itself. Maybe you're waiting on Mr. Wright or Mrs. Wright. Maybe you're waiting to start a family. Maybe you're waiting to have a relationship restored. Or maybe you're waiting for the resolution of some health problem. Could be anything like that or many other things. But you pray and you pray and God doesn't seem to do anything. And the only thing you can do is wait. James Moore, in his book entitled, Is There Life After Stress?, lists four common responses to the stress of roadblocks or waiting for things that are not coming about. He says one response is to get angry. One is to become absorbed with self-pity. Another response he says is to blame someone else. But here's the one I'm most concerned with that he puts in the list. Quitting. You see, there's a lot of times in our Christian life we are tempted to quit on God, quit serving God, quit worshiping God. Just quit on God because God's not doing what we think He should be doing. He's not giving us the help that we think He should be giving us. He's not answering the prayer that we've been praying. Waiting is certainly not the choice we would make. Yet somehow, many times, God deems it the absolute best thing. We pray and we pray, and the only answer we get is wait. Why is it that God makes us wait. You ever thought about that? You see, those times when we are tempted to quit, the answer that we believe is the right one is that God doesn't have any good reason. Or God doesn't somehow love us enough. Those are wrong conclusions. There are times when we want something that we perhaps should not want at all, and we just can't seem to accept the fact that God's will is not to answer a particular prayer or desire. But more often than not, the problem is the timing. We are in a hurry, and God isn't. And we think what we want, what we need, it should be something that is immediate, or at least pretty soon. And God keeps pushing it back because God knows there's a better time. And we must learn to wait. But what value could there really be in waiting? What value could there possibly be in delay? The answer, in short, is much. Much value. There can be a lot of value in waiting. And that's what we want to talk about this morning. Why so often God seems to do nothing while we wait on His help? Chapter 40, the book of Genesis. Waiting on God is never a waste of time. The reason that is true is because when we wait on God, when we wait on His time, and eventually He brings together the perfect resolution to our situation or our problem, the benefits are worth the wait. I want you to see that in the life of Joseph. Chapter 40 of Genesis, verse 1, and it came to pass after these things. Well, we need to go back for just a moment and talk about what it was that Moses meant when he said after these things. Let's just refresh our memory. Joseph was given that splendid coat by his father, and it seemed to indicate his higher status in the family and for the inheritance and all that going forward. And Joseph was put in a position of reporting on what the other brothers were doing, and a lot of jealousy developed, and eventually his brothers plotted to kill him, and if it wasn't for the intervention of a couple, they may have done that, but what they did was they confined him in a pit, a cistern, if you will, a dry well, hole in the ground, and then they sold him as a slave to a caravan of Midianites coming through, and they tore up his coat, they put blood on it, and told his father he'd been killed by a wild animal, and Joseph was gone. For the next 13 years of Joseph's life, between age 13 and age 30, he is in a foreign land. He goes somewhere where he knows no one. He doesn't know the language. He's not familiar with their culture. He is an absolute outsider, and he has no power over anything. He is a slave. He's purchased by a man by the name of Potiphar. But God blesses Joseph. We found out that even though Joseph was in this dire situation, God was with him. And God blessed everything he put his hands on. And Potiphar recognized that God was with him and God was blessing him. And eventually Potiphar said, here's all of my land. Here's all of my possessions. Here's everything I own. You take care of it. And God just heaped the blessings on. And Potiphar, his master, was greatly blessed as a result. But then Potiphar's wife had designs on Joseph. And when Joseph refused her advances, she lied about it. We mentioned 2 weeks ago that Potiphar probably saw through a lot of what his wife was doing, but he was in a position publicly there wasn't much he could do. So Joseph is put into prison. He goes all the way back to being completely at the mercy of others. The lowest man on the totem pole, if you will. He's in prison, confined. That's where we find him when it says, "And it came to pass after these things." Then it says this, "The butler and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief butler and the chief baker. So he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison, the place where Joseph was confined. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them, and they were in custody for a while." Now, let's stop here for just a moment. We're going to find here the first reason why God makes us wait. Number one, it teaches us faithfulness. Now think about this. Joseph took some very tough circumstances and turned them into gold in the house of Potiphar by being a hard worker, a very intelligent person, and a person that trusted God and received the blessing of God. And what did he get for it? Thrown into prison. Most people would have quit on God right about that point. Said, "Lord, I didn't deserve coming down here. And then you bless me all for the reason of just throwing me in this dungeon. Why should I serve you?" Joseph didn't take that perspective. And so we read in verse 4, "And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them." That word serve, that verb in the Hebrew here, is in the Hebrew stem, the basic word from which this verb is put together. That stem is what's called an intensive verb. Meaning that it's not just saying that, well, Joseph took care of them. No, Joseph served them with all of his strength and all of his might. Joseph took a hold of what he had to do, and he did it as passionately and as powerfully and as effectively as he could for the glory of God. Boy, that's far from being a quitter, isn't it? Joseph had already learned from his previous experience in Potiphar's house that if he did what he was supposed to do, God would eventually show up. You see, we can learn the right lesson or we can learn the wrong lesson depending on our perspective. Joseph had the right one. Now, these two men, the chief butler and the chief baker, were high up in the cabinet of Pharaoh, the most powerful man in the world probably at this point. Now, the baker baked bread, and the butler here, as he is described, was basically the cup bearer for the Pharaoh, who took care of all that he drank. So you had the man who was in charge of all that the Pharaoh ate, the man who was in charge of all that the Pharaoh drank. Now, they had others underneath of them. It was probably a big operation, but they were at the very top, and they were people that had a position of extreme trust. Because when you're the most powerful man in the world, there's a lot of people that want to slip you a little something to assassinate you. Maybe poison in your drink or whatever. So these men were highly trusted and had a very high position. And we're not told what happened, but for some reason or another, Pharaoh is offended by them and they end up in prison. Now here's something else I want you to notice. Look again at verse 3. "And so he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard." Now, captain of the guard, verse 3. Now go back up to chapter 39, right at the end. Verse 22, it mentions that Joseph was put in custody of the keeper of the prison. So who's the captain of the guard? Oh, let's go back in our context for a moment. Let's turn back to chapter 37, I believe it is, and verse 36. When Joseph first arrived in Egypt, chapter 37, verse 36, it says, Now the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard. Now the keeper of the prison probably was someone who worked for Potiphar, but it was Potiphar that was over the prison. As this officer whose title was captain of the guard. But Joseph had more than one reason to not do his job. He's still working for Potiphar. He still belongs to Potiphar. And Potiphar, his master, throws him into a prison. And Joseph is innocent. But he could have had some real resentment at this point toward his master, who's still there, wringing everything he can get out of Joseph. And when these two very important men come into the prison, Potiphar probably says to himself, I know that they're in prison, and I know they've offended Pharaoh, but these guys need a little bit of special treatment. Because who knows whether they will go back, whether they will come back into the good graces of Pharaoh. And so Joseph, Potiphar thinks, hey, who can better take care of this than Joseph? So Joseph here is furthering the interests of Potiphar again. But yet he does so with all of his might. Wow. Joseph understands something about faithfulness. By doing the job he's told to do, whether he likes it or not, whether it's fair or not, because he knows that if he does what God puts before him to do, be it something big or little, there'll be a blessing in the end. And when we are waiting, we should be learning that same lesson. Might be waiting for something better. We better give our soul to what we're doing. Because if God's got us in that position, God's got a reason. And there's a purpose there, and it's important. Reason number two, when God makes us wait, it enhances our sensitivity toward other people. Let's take up where we left off. Verse 5, then the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt who were confined in the prison had a dream, both of them, each man's dream in one night, and each man's dream with its own interpretation. And Joseph came in to them in the morning and looked at them and saw that they were sad. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in the custody of his lord's house, there's another indication it was Potiphar, saying, why do you look so sad today? Now let's just stop right there. Joseph is so in tune with taking care of these men that he has already become a student of them and of their personality and of their disposition and of their appearance. And they are, in spite of who they are, and they might have been people, they were Egyptians, and they might have been men who would have literally looked down on Joseph, a slave, a Hebrew slave. They may not have even treated him very well or been very appreciative of anything he was doing, but yet Joseph understands what it's like to be mistreated. At least he understands what it's like to suffer. And he sees that these men are not only suffering in prison, but on this day they are suffering more than usual, and he understands, he can see it, he can sense it. He has a sensitivity that has been developed through suffering. And when you and I have to wait on God, when we don't have our needs met as we think they should be met, as we go through a little bit of deprivation, as we have some struggle, one of the outcomes of that should be that we become more sensitive toward the struggles and the problems and the suffering and the needs of other people. But the temptation is to become so self-absorbed anytime we suffer that we think the world revolves around us. Let me tell you something, it does not. The world revolves around God and His glory. And we need to remember that. And if we can find a way to glorify God in every circumstance and every situation, we will be the much better person for it. Let's move on to number three. Third reason why God makes us wait. It increases our faith. You say, how so? Well, let's see what happened. In verse 7, he had asked them, why are you so sad? Verse 8, and they said unto him, we each have had a dream, and there is no interpreter of it. So Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me, please. I'll stop there for a moment. Because in ancient Egypt, dreams were thought to be the way that they didn't believe in one God in Egypt, but their gods, whatever it was they believed in. Dreams were thought to be the way that their gods communicated to them what was going to happen in the future. Now, it just so happens that Joseph had a couple dreams. Remember that? His sheaves, or his brother's sheaves, bowing down to his sheaves. The sun, the moon, and the stars bowing down. You remember those? Now, there was no one that interpreted those dreams because they were so obvious that Jacob and all his brothers could see what those dreams could possibly mean going forward. And it just added fuel to the fire why his brothers were so jealous to think that they would ever somehow someday bow down to him. By the way, that's what's going to happen. So God certainly can communicate through dreams, and he has done so in the past. But I would warn each and every one of you, don't expect him to do it for you. It's a very rare occasion in Scripture that you find it, actually. And usually it has to do with some very rare individuals like Joseph, Daniel, Joseph again. Remember that? The father of the earthly father. Not biological father, but the earthly father of Jesus. And we're told again that early in Acts, that, you know, eventually, often the end times, dreams may come back into the picture. But I can tell you from experience, I usually dream about something that's happened already. Isn't that the way it works? Something that's on your mind. I can tell you about a doozy I had last night. But I won't bore you with that. But these men are in prison, so they don't have access to the wise men of Egypt, the dream interpreters. There was a whole class of people that dealt with this. They don't have access to them. That's why they're sad. Now look at Joseph's answer. Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me, please. That's pretty bold. Joseph is not an interpreter of dreams, never interpreted a dream in his life. He had a couple significant dreams, but he never interpreted one. Yet, he says to these men, well, if there's any meaning in this, God knows what it is. And it is an absolute step of faith for Joseph at this point to say, look, God knows the answer. Tell them to me, because I know God. That's pretty bold. Where did that kind of faith come from? I'll tell you where it came from. He learned it at home at his daddy's knee. It never left him. And even though he was sold as a slave and mistreated by his brothers, he learned that God was good and God would never forsake him. And even though he's in prison, he senses that God is about to open the floodgates of blessing. But he doesn't know the outcome of all of this. He takes a step of faith and says, you don't have an interpreter? Let me have the dream. Let's see what God can do about it. Now, we don't see it here in the text. And we're not told what the time lapse was. Did he immediately interpret the dream? If he did, that's real faith. But he could have taken a moment or two to pray and ask God to reveal it to him. He could have prayed about it for a few days, although it doesn't seem that's the case here. I think there was. I don't think it was a matter of look at me. I'm an important. Very blessed, extremely intelligent person. I can handle it. That was not his approach. He said, "God knows," and it was a sheer step of faith to believe that God somehow was going to reveal it to him. But he's been operating on faith for the last how many years now? To believe that his life will ever become anything took faith. He had to have faith to respond this way in prison now, serving Potiphar a second time. And so when the opportunity comes for Joseph to take a step, he seizes the moment. You see, waiting is not passive. Waiting is like that tomcat who's sitting there motionless for what seems like an eternity before he pounces on that rabbit or whatever. But there comes a moment when those that are still and those that are waiting on God realizes God has brought a moment of significance to bear, and they seize that moment in faith. That's what Joseph does. Verse 9, and the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, "Behold, in my dream a vine was before me, and in vine were three branches, and it was as though it budded in blossoms, shot forth, and its clusters brought forth ripe grapes. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand." And Joseph said to him, "This is the interpretation of it. In 3 days, the three branches are 3 days. And within 3 days, Pharaoh's will lift up your head and restore you to your place. And you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand according to the former manner when you were his butler." Now let's drop down, if you will, to verse 16. When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said to Joseph, "I also was in my dream, and there was three white baskets on my head, and in the uppermost basket were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh, and the birds ate them out of the basket on my head." So Joseph answered and said, "This is the interpretation of it. The three baskets are 3 days, and within 3 days Pharaoh's will lift off your head." He's going to lift up one guy's head. He's going to lift off the other guy's head. Joseph would have made a great preacher, wouldn't he? You like the way he outlines this? "He will lift off your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat the flesh from you." Now it came to pass on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants, and he restored the chief butler to his butlership again, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand, but he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. You see, Joseph exercised faith, but he didn't have confirmation of it until these things actually played out. That's faith. And the confirmation we've done the right thing always comes along eventually. But we want God to tell us ahead of time, don't we? Well, we want to know what God wants us to do so we can do it. And now God says, no, here's an opportunity for you to exercise your faith, and you need to seize that opportunity. And if indeed that is what is taking place, their confirmation will come. This is what Joseph does. I suggest to you that he had a greater faith at this moment in his life because he had trusted God in the prior days of his captivity. And faith begets faith. And the exercise of faith produces more faith. Like when we exercise our bodies, we exercise our muscles, we become stronger and we can handle more weight. And that is what suffering and waiting on God can do for us. But there's another aspect, another reason why God asks us to wait. It develops our character. So let's go on. Verse 23, and the chief butler did not remember Joseph. Well, we'll come back to that in a moment. Verse 41, then it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream. So the chief butler is back serving Pharaoh. He doesn't say anything about Joseph, although Joseph asked that he put in a good word for him. And again, we'll come back to that in a moment. Two more years elapse. Here is Joseph, who he feels like he's had an opportunity. He seizes that opportunity. The chief butler goes back to serve Pharaoh. You would think there would be some reward, some thought of Joseph, but there's none. 2 years go by, nothing. But then after 2 years, suddenly, well, let's go back to verse 1 of chapter 41. Then it came to pass at the end of 2 years that Pharaoh had a dream. And behold, he stood by the river, and suddenly there came up out of the river 7 cows, fine looking and fat, and they fed in the meadow. And behold, 7 other cows came up after them out of the river, ugly and gaunt, and stood by the other cows on the bank of the river. And the ugly cows ate up the 7 fine-looking and fat cows. So Pharaoh awoke. He slept and dreamed a second dream. And suddenly, 7 heads of grain came up on one stalk. That would be great if you could have 7 ears of corn on one stalk, wouldn't it? That's pretty productive. Plump and good, they are described in verse 5. Verse 6, then behold, the 7 thin heads, blighted by the east wind, sprang up after them. And the 7 thin heads devoured the 7 plump and full heads. So Pharaoh awake, and indeed it was a dream. Now it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men, and he told them his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret. Pharaoh had people on his staff to handle this. And they said, we have no idea what this means. But then the chief baker remembers what Joseph did for him and informs Pharaoh. Verse 14, we can drop down there. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him quickly out of the dungeon. And he shaved and changed his clothing, and he came to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, and there is no one that can interpret it. But I have heard it said that you can understand a dream to interpret it. So Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, what do you think? He would have been tempted to say, I can handle it. You've called the right man. No, that's not what he says, though. He says, it's not in me. No, I can't do it. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace, an answer that will bring him peace. So Pharaoh recounts the 2 dreams to Joseph. Drop down to verse 25 now. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. The 7 good cows are 7 years, and the 7 good heads are 7 years, and the dreams are one. They have the same meaning. In verse 32, he says, you had 2 dreams because God wanted to establish the fact that this was set. This was going to happen. This was a sure thing. Verse 32. But backing up for just a moment, go back to verse 26. Joseph speaking. The 7 good cows are 7 years, and the 7 good heads are 7 years. The dreams are one. And the 7 thin and ugly cows which came up are 7 years, and the 7 empty heads blighted by the east wind are 7 years of famine. Now this is a thing that all the magicians of Egypt missed. They did not connect the numbers with years. That was the key to unlocking the meaning. Of course, they didn't have God's help either. Verse 28. And this is the thing which I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. Indeed, 7 years of great plenty will come throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them, 7 years of famine will arise, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will deplete the land. So the plenty will not be known in the land because of the famine following, for it will be very severe. Then he tells Pharaoh why there were 2 dreams, verse 32. And then he adds something here that has nothing to do with the dream other than how to handle the situation that's about to come. He says in verse 32, now therefore let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. The word discerning here means someone who has insight, and the word wise here means someone who has the ability to apply that insight to the situation, has the capacity to figure it all out, plan it all out, and take care of it. Verse 34, let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land to collect 1/5 of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 plentiful years. And store up grain, he's told in verse 35. So he gives Pharaoh advice on how to handle the coming famine. And I don't think he had any designs here. But look what happens. Verse 38. And Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find such an one as this, a man in whom is the Spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Inasmuch as God has shown you all this, there is no one as discerning and wise as you." His humility that we see when he says, "It's not in me." His discernment, his wisdom, all of that developed in the last 13 years as a slave in Egypt. He didn't have a lot of wisdom back when he was 17, and he told his brothers those dreams. Now, they were real and they were from God, but it wasn't a very smart way to create harmony in a family, was it? He's obtained a lot of wisdom. He's attained discernment. Listen, I said it before, I'll say it again. If you can handle a prison full of inmates, you can probably manage pretty much anything. Plus, he had had all the experience of managing Potiphar's house. Potiphar would have been a multi-millionaire by modern-day standards. His possessions, his lands and all that would have been great. Joseph has all kinds of experience, and it has developed his character. And God is more interested in developing our character than he is taking care of our problems. We've got to understand that. Now, there's one last reason. Here's where it gets good. These four have been good, but this is really good. Reason number five, it results in even greater blessings than we ever imagined when we wait. Now let's go back for a moment. We're going to go back to the butler and the baker's dreams. Back into chapter 40, right after he had interpreted the butler's dream, at verse 14 of chapter 40, after he tells the butler he's going to be restored to Pharaoh's court, he says this in verse 14, "But remember me when it is well with you, and please show kindness to me, make mention of me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this house, for indeed I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews, and I have done nothing here that should put me in this dungeon." And the result of that is down in verse 23, where it says the chief butler forgot him. And for 2 years, nothing happened, according to chapter 41, verse 1. See, Joseph had faith. He seized an opportunity, sensing God was working. But the only thing Joseph thought about was God getting him out of prison. And if somehow he would have known and had the choice, "Joseph, do you want to stay in prison 2 more years and end up being the prime minister of Egypt? Or do you just want to get out today and be a nobody?" What do you think he would have chose? You see, that was the choice. He has no vision of anything beyond getting out of that dungeon and having his freedom again. And he presents a legal argument for the butler to take to the man who controls it all, Pharaoh. It goes nowhere. Why did the butler forget? God wouldn't let him remember. That's why. Why did he spend 2 more years in prison? God hadn't put together all the pieces of the puzzle yet. The time wasn't right. But when God's time was right, what happens? "There's no one," says Pharaoh, "more discerning and wise than you that should be put over this matter." More than he could have ever dreamed of. Unbelievable. He's promoted the number 2 man in all of Egypt. He is given the authority to transact business for Pharaoh, a signet ring. He is allowed to ride around in the number 2 chariot. That would be like Air Force 2. He is given a wife. God blesses him with 2 children, Ephraim and Manasseh. I don't have time to read it all, but it's all there. He never dreamed what God had for him. And when we wait, the benefits are always worth it. I don't like Cracker Jacks. I've never liked Cracker Jacks. My wife likes Cracker Jacks. Cracker Jacks are popcorn covered with molasses. I suppose they're still molasses. Originally they were molasses, at least. And there's peanuts in there covered with molasses. And I love peanuts, but I don't like peanuts covered in molasses. I've never liked Cracker Jacks. When I was a kid, I understand Cracker Jacks have taken the prize out. I'm really shocked. That's the only reason I ever wanted a Cracker Jack when I was a kid. I go to the store, what do you want? I want some Cracker Jacks. I didn't like Cracker Jacks. I just wanted the prize in the bottom of the box. You remember that? Some of you young people are looking a little strange at me here. Those are Cracker Jacks. Might ring a bell. If not, I don't know what to say. I get that box of Cracker Jacks, and I immediately turn it upside down and open the bottom and pull the prize out. Anybody ever done that? I thought so. I suspect there's a few more people here who don't like Cracker Jacks than me. But my dad loved Cracker Jacks. So when us boys said, yeah, we want a box of Cracker Jacks, oh, Dad's, oh, yeah, sure, I'll buy you two or three. We pull the prize out, throw the Cracker Jacks away. Dad sat there and munched on Cracker Jacks for the next hour. He loved Cracker Jack. Now, this is what I'm saying to you this morning. When you fail to wait, you miss a lot of the joy in life. And we opened the bottom. We pulled out that little good-for-nothing, lousy little trinket. Half the time, we couldn't figure out what it was. And Dad just enjoyed a feast of Cracker Jacks. Waiting isn't so bad if you learn to like Cracker Jacks. Not literal Cracker Jacks, but the Cracker Jacks that God's put in life for you. Joseph found Cracker Jacks in Potiphar's house. He found Cracker Jacks in the prison. He found Cracker Jacks on the floor. Everywhere he went, there was Cracker Jack. Because he was conditioned to find them, to see them, and understand that let's just enjoy life today. Trust God for tomorrow. And when you live like that, you can't help but be surprised someday at what God does in the end.